For so very long, it's been...
Go on, George. Tell how it's gonna be.
But in the end, the commish only said...
We figured it 17 different ways. And every time we figured it, it was no good. Because no matter how we figured it...
But no matter how you figure it out, I still don't get as much as anybody else.
Somebody don't like the way we figured it. So now, there's only one way to figure it. And that is every man for himself.
When Black Friday comes,
this is the end.
It's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Or is it now? As a new year hits, through it all, Beaver Nation moves ahead with resiliency and hope.
Sun's up.
Mm-hmm.
Looks okay. The world survives into another day.
And the way forward goes through, as it must, The Joe Beaver Show with John Warren and Mike Parker.
A number of times I heard these guys' voices over and over and over. Still can't find it.
Ah, can't find it? We can help.
This here is 1240.
1240?
It's always been 1240.
My client says it's 1240.
Yeah, plus 93.7 FM and streaming live at KEJOAM.com and on the KEJO app. It's the Joe Beaver Show.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome in. Living on the margins, yes, but actually getting here on time.
Yeah.
When the show opens, that's just an incredible harbinger for the week, I hope. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning.
You had family commitments yesterday in the big city, the big city of Portland.
That's right. That's right.
And thus could not attend the game, but I know the storylines of yesterday afternoon's game and another... Great job by the Beavers to find a way to win. Now, I understand that, you know, get out. I think Idaho State's going to present an opportunity to have the kind of game where you're going to get out and then Pac-12 play starts thereafter.
Right.
And so the next game for the Beavers this Thursday against Idaho State, an odd start time, 4 o'clock, 3:30 airtime
That's right. We have tickets we'll give away later.
We will do that. The women begin their Maui Classic participation and at 9:30 p.m. for the tip, 9 o'clock tomorrow night. Ron Callen from Maui will hope to check in with Ron tomorrow.
Is it 3 hours? So that would be 6:30
I think so.
For them?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I've never quite known the exact time difference.
I only know that because 24 years ago when I started with the women, the first trip we had was a trip to Hawaii. I'd never been to Hawaii before. I'd never called games for the women's team before. And we go to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was the big island, big city. It rained the entire time. There was nothing special about it as far as my first opportunity to go to Hawaii.
I remember you saying you didn't have a chance to hit the beach much or do any of those sorts of things.
No, yeah. And it was just, I thought, well, why is everybody saying how great Hawaii is?
Mm-hmm.
And then... then the next time I went to Hawaii was with you. I flew over there for the sole purpose of engineering a basketball game.
Yes.
You called it, I engineered it. And I literally flew over, stayed in the hotel, went to the Stan Sheriff Center, engineered the game, went back to the hotel, went to the airport, and went home.
Once again, not getting the full-blown Hawaiian experience.
When my family says, let's go to Hawaii for vacation, I'm like, there's nothing there. That's literally how I feel. There's nothing there.
Well, I have to disagree with your radio work there, Johnny.
There was one time on the trip with the women 23 years ago, 24, where we went to Pearl Harbor. That was special.
Yes, that's an amazing thing to do. Good morning, John. Welcome into
home.
The Joe Beaver Show. Alan Thayer at 12:05.
Good.
That's our guest list for today. We'll have others as we go. Big Jim Wilson. I think tomorrow we're working out a day and a time to finally get into a little bit, as he is the best at the other team.
Yeah, the X's and O's.
Okay, well, here's based on his knowledge of their depth chart and who's available to them, what he expects from Notre Dame, and a little bit about what he's expecting from Oregon State's. In many cases, guys, we don't know a great deal about that will get more opportunity here in the 90th Sun Bowl coming up. So we'll have guests as we go. But today, for the most part, open phones with Alan Thayer to talk about. And I like the way he Alan, the founder of Beavers Behind Enemy Lines, innovative law group in Eugene, specializing in business law, and has been our go-to expert on all manner of the legal maneuverings. Here's what he wrote when we talked about him coming on today. He said, the procedure, here's what he wrote. Again, I read the beginning of an Alan Thayer text and say, he writes texts unlike other souls who write to me. You know, for the most part, we share along the lines of, hey, the Beavs look good, or hey, good win for them. Man, they struggle. They need to, you know, whatever the case may. Hey, I like what we did in the portal. Good hire by Bray, whatever. Texts from friends and other Beaver believers who I'm grateful to be able to correspond with. Here's how he began Alan's text this morning. The procedural posture of this case is out of the ordinary. Well, that sentence is out of the ordinary in the overall scheme of things. But I look forward to him explicating that in an hour. The procedural posture of this case is out of the ordinary, referring to our case in the Pac-2. This has people confused, he writes. I've come up with an analogy just for you that will put it in context. We'll talk about what might happen next. So he's not even, we're going to find out together.
He didn't text you that analogy.
No, he hasn't texted me the analogy. He hasn't talked about what might happen next. All he says is, the procedural posture of this case is out of the ordinary. Well, okay. I believe you, Alan, and I look forward to hearing what that means in his mind, what analogy he's come up with, and what might happen next.
You know, it's so funny because in the beginning of all this, I was on top of everything, every second, every minute. We were talking a lot about this. I think we cover this issue on this show more than anybody, I think, except for the writers that are digging deep, you know, following Canzano, Wilner, and those guys. So we're on top of it. But somewhere along the line, a couple of weeks ago or a couple of situations ago, I kind of let go. It started to get a little bit too confusing. Maybe it was after one Alan Thayer conversation. I was like, I don't know that I follow it so much anymore. Because, I mean, isn't it true that really all of this is just set up and then the end will be whether or not it goes to trial?
Right.
And I think when that realization came in, I thought, then that's going to start it. Make it last forever. And I'm like, I'm out. I'm done.
No, I got you. That's a great point. And I think Alan will address those types of things. Okay, well, what does this mean and what does happen next?
Yeah.
Are we moving towards a settlement that will be favorable to the two? Or will it go to trial with a chance for it to be even more favorable or potentially maybe not so much? So what you got to make a decision along those lines.
Well,
sense.
This reading, this I don't know, was this Thursday or Friday of
Friday.
Last week? Okay, so this comes out, and when I say I'm done, I mean I'm done trying to know the intricate details, but I'm still very interested in what happens. And so I was just kind of basically looking for any words and any sentences that said favorable for Oregon State and Washington State, and it did.
It did. Everything is trending along those rhetorical lines, and it's more than just mere rhetoric. I had a professor years ago who said, I hate the phrase mere rhetoric. Don't you understand that rhetoric was an art taught by Aristotle? And while condemned by Plato, Plato said there was a higher and true rhetoric that existed in heaven, the Platonic rhetoric. That's a good thing. So mere rhetoric is dismissive. Like, it's just people jabbering and talking. And this professor would walk around the halls with almost a cape-like outfit on, and then we'd see him before he'd come up for his memorable lectures attended by people from outside the classroom. People would come in. LaRusso's going to be talking. He was a cousin of Rudy LaRusso, the former NBA player. Tom Water knows Rudy LaRusso. Brooks Hatch, Tim Hennessy, Paul Miller, for a few, seven or eight more of you know of Rudy LaRusso. But anyway, Dominic LaRusso, his cousin, was a professor down the road. But we would see him sitting on a little bench in a garden-type area outside the classroom on the campus down the road, sitting there before class would start, we'd say, look at LaRusso. And he would be in that thinker-type pose, just sitting there, stroking his chin, sitting on the bench. And then he would rise and walk and come into the room, usually just come walking in, talking while he's, okay, today. And off we would go. He would call on people in the class, make you stand up sometimes and Tell us what you know about Aristotle's theory of politics and rhetoric and how the two are related. You know, that type of stuff.
Wow.
If you said, no, he did not write or say, that's not part of it. That type of thing. If you've ever seen The Paper Chase.
Yeah, with John Houseman.
It felt like that a little bit in his classroom.
Gosh.
Anyhow, LaRusso hated the phrase mere rhetoric.
Were you scared to go in?
Yes, we were nervous to go in.
Yeah.
Nervous every day, all of us. Oh, my gosh, no. Don't call on me, please. So it's the only class in my life down there, in almost any class ever in life, where you had that kind of feeling.
Yeah.
But because of it, John, it's wholly memorable. He was a memorable figure in our lives, one that we exerted energy being nervous about.
Yeah, yeah,
and to
yeah.
have somebody like that once in a while in your life probably ain't a bad thing.
No, no. But it makes you forces you to be on top of your game.
No. Aristotle did not say, start your answer again, Mr. Parker. No. So, to close the book on that, I think I've shared many years ago before, but one of the first shows I ever did then is The Voice of the Beavers at Block 15 with Dennis Erickson, the coach's show, back in a different time and place when those early days of the coach's shows, huge gatherings, Block 15 downtown. It was called, it wasn't Block 15 then.
No, it was something different.
Yeah, come on now. It was also simple then as time rewritten every
I don't I remember.
Of? Come
I
on
honestly
now.
Don't remember.
The Headline Cafe. There we go.
It just came to me.
Yes. The Headline Cafe.
I remember going there. And then it moved to the Fox and Firkin, right?
A couple of years later, the Headline Cafe was a bit notorious in headlines from an incident downtown, if I remember. But the Headline Cafe with Dennis Erickson and almost standing room. I mean, people getting there early.
Yeah.
People
hard to get in.
Yeah, cramped quarters and Dennis Erickson, the rock star, coming to town.
I remember a basketball season at the Headline Cafe, and Eddie Payne was on.
Yes.
And there was a little stage area where you were, and again, cramped quarters. I brought my little son at the time, and he went up and asked a question because there was a microphone.
Right.
He went up and asked a question, and I remember it was just one of those odd things where someone doesn't hear you right, and you don't correct them. You just let it go. And it was crowded. It was a commercial break, and Maddie went up, asked him a question on the microphone. And I said, good job, Maddie. And Eddie Payne thought I said, good job, Eddie.
Oh.
And he goes, oh, thank you.
Well, thank you.
But the funny thing was that I would never say, good job, Eddie.
No, you wouldn't.
I wouldn't do that. That's kind of like, hey, Knight. I just wouldn't do that.
Right.
And but I didn't say anything. I just smiled. And
that's funny. You should have said, attaboy, Luther, to see if he got it.
Yeah, right.
But you said, nice job, Maddie. He thought it was nice job, Eddie.
Eddie, yeah.
But LaRusso, Rudy's cousin, Dominic LaRusso, one of those early shows, shows up and sits upstairs in the upper balcony of the Headline Cafe. And I saw him walking in, and that made me nervous. Oh, my gosh, I haven't seen LaRusso for 25 years or whatever it was, longer than that. But he came in and then came down after, Mike, I've followed your career. I'm proud of you. You did a nice job with Coach Erickson. I'm a big fan of Oregon State and you, and good luck to you. And I just wanted to be here for a big night. And I love the man. I really did, even though he was intimidating, maybe because he was a little intimidating. I think we all have figures, at least I hope, once in a while in life, they make you a little bit uncomfortable.
But you want to impress them. You want to do well.
Yes, you want to be on your game, as you said.
Yeah.
And so, anyhow, mere rhetoric. But it seems to me to be more than just, you know, rhetoric when it comes to, and that's what I am interested in hearing a little bit more about today in Open Phones. And that is your reaction to the news of late last week. We kind of came to it late, but it does feel to be trending a little bit in the right direction, or a little better, a little bit more optimistic. I say all of that knowing that the fire hose of information and so on could knock us all down in the next 15 minutes about, well, this kid's in the portal, that happened, or whatever else. But I've sort of liked how things have been moving along a bit here. And I'm just curious, as we open, before we visit with Alan Thayer, what your thoughts are. He'll join us at 12:05, if you've ruminated a bit more about the schedule, if you've thought a little bit more about some of the news in the portal, whatever else, open phones at 497-5356, the Downward Dog phone line, the University Honda text line, 497-5356. I will tell you that I've reached out to one Ed Browning just to see if that may hit as the week goes along. Ed, a former Beaver quarterback, 87-91, didn't get into a lot of games, was not a star quarterback here, but he was a quarterback for the Beavers.
Yeah.
And his son, a young man by the name of Jake Browning.
Having a great run.
I just think it's a great story. Jake was somewhat under-recruited, ended up going to Washington. Chris Peterson, Jonathan Smith, had a good career there, helped the Huskies go to the CFP in 2016 with a gigantic year. But it's sort of his story. Well, you know, I'm not going to emphasize his former coach at Washington's part of it as the quarterback's coach and O-coordinator, per se, if we talked to Ed Browning. The last time we talked to Ed was upon the hiring of that coach who's no longer here.
Right.
And Ed saying, my son loved him, and he's going to do a great job there.
Yeah.
That was essentially the message from Ed Browning, that Jake really benefited and learned a lot from that former coach. But I would just want to talk to Ed about how the sense of overachieving and the chip on the shoulder mentality, which I love stories like that, the underdog kind of story. That's how Canzano, in terms of the rhetoric of all of this, took the Oregon State, Washington State victory in court. Doesn't mean it's all over, and Alan will share all on that at 12:05, but it was good. It was a good ruling for the state Supreme Court to lift the stay and give the governing work in detail to the two. The blessed two, Washington State, Oregon State.
You know, I'm curious to Alan with Alan about what does that mean? What can they do?
And what can't they do, maybe?
Right.
In the short run, in the meantime, but while we wait for what Alan says, he's teased it, what could be next? But Canzano in the Bald-Faced Truth, a good piece, said he's not running into any people who are not rooting for Oregon State and Washington State to get a major victory here and to stay the course as the governing body and to have the assets to distribute as they see fit and to help themselves build themselves up and survive. Canzano said that's an underdog story of the first order, the two left, and that he is running into even people, fan bases of the other schools, Washington, Oregon, the effect of go Beavs, go Cougs. Mm-hmm. They didn't put themselves in this position. We're pulling for them.
Yeah.
Even people that are among the treacherous 10,
right,
the departing schools, the traitorous 10, however we view them, are leaving, but they're saying, many of them heading out the door, many, not all, of course, but many, I hope you win. I hope you get money. I hope you find a way to survive. Is that kind of how you're... In your world, do you run into many who take an opposite view? Canzano says no, that's a popular view where he, in his circles, that people are rooting for the Beavs and Cougs to continue to get victories and good news such as they got on Friday.
Right.
So if you have any thoughts about that in your world, in your circle, 497-5356. John also touched on, as we'll go to Merle in just a moment. John also touched on the ambivalence some have towards the scheduling of a game on September 14th between the Beavers and one of the departing schools from down the road that will come to Reser on the 14th. The ambivalence created for a lot of reasons, one of which, though, is this fear of it's been an unequal playing field for a long time. And then with Phil Knight coming into the fold and becoming, as Bob Toledo called him, the best owner in all of sports when he began to lavish his alma mater with great gifts, not only on the athletic side, but the academic side. Mm-hmm. And good for him. Good for Phil and Penny to do that. But since that, the disparity, which might have already existed, grew even larger. And it's been difficult to compete with that. So now people are worried that, okay, if the Beavers are relegated or somewhat, their situation is lesser, they're not on any kind of equal playing field within the conference for a couple of years or for a time, then there's a fear that the disparity between the two might grow, and thus the game itself could become less competitive.
That's when you wouldn't want to have them on your schedule, when you're at the competitive disadvantage. Because, again, clearly you can say it's been going on for years. No, I'm talking about you're down to the level where you're getting straight twos, some threes, and never a four because of the level that you're at. Then it's not competitive. But if you're trying to compete with money and you're up there in a conference like it's always been, it's way closer. They just have nicer toys instead of across the board better recruits.
And pretty good NIL fund and all of those things that now have also changed the landscape.
Right.
So what are your thoughts about all of this? And the chip on the shoulder mentality, though, I like, because Trent Bray and his staff are going to, they've always recruited to it, even before some of the latest levels of disparity have come into existence with this conference uncertainty and the independent status for a while. All of that creates even, you know, greater challenges. But it also adds to the rhetorical force of you guys, you're overlooked, you're underloved, unappreciated. So a guy like Jake Browning has his big moment yesterday and pulls out a big win, and he's doing amazingly well. And he pretty much says to the cameras, apparently, I haven't seen it, but I've read about it, to Minnesota, you shouldn't have cut me. And as one writer said in The Athletic, Vikings fans didn't even know they cut him. I mean, was he with us? Was he with us at one time?
Well, he's had a good couple of weeks. It wasn't
just
yesterday.
Yes, he has. No, I know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. He's suddenly now, and he talked about always operating with a chip on his shoulder. That's a mentality going forward now that I love, that I think Trent and his staff at Oregon State have always recruited to now more than ever. And I think you're going to get guys in here that message is going to resonate with, and we're going to see the results of it. I'm excited about some of the things I've been reading and hearing about the kids in the portal, et cetera. 497-5356, the Downward Dog phone line, the University Honda text line. Any early thoughts this week about the late news, late last week, schedule release, transfer portal news, anything else you want to jump in with? Merle Jr. gets us started today. Merle, good morning.
Oh, Mike. I by popular request from last week, you know, some guy came on and said, oh, I need to be moved to the top of the list about the schedule. So props to that. I'm excited to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have no problem with the schedule. I think, you know, a lot of people, I have no problem with who we're playing. We're playing, you know, the top three teams this year in the Mountain West and then the bottom three teams. So there's a good competitive balance there. My issue, though, is we were told the five power five. And when I say told, I mean that was well reported and quoted by our AD. And so to have that not work out is a bummer. It's a bummer because we aren't playing five power five as in, oh, we have to play five power five to get into the playoff or anything like that. It's just a bummer of the leadership part. And I think it's a little microcosm of, you know, I'm interested on why you've kind of changed your tone on Jonathan, I feel like, of you don't really want to say his name on air anymore. And
true.
I'm curious why that is.
Well.
Because I personally, this is a microcosm of, I understand Jonathan. If this is what's happened of, oh, we're going to have five power five, we're going to have five power five, and then we have four. That's a big deal for, and I think that's just a microcosm of kind of how him and Barnes's relationship was. And that's kind of the thing where I kind of feel for Jonathan, as far as it doesn't seem like he had a real close, tight relationship with Barnes because there were no answers. I mean, yeah, we got the schedule. It was 10 days late from when we said we were going to get it. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that? And kind of why is your team kind of changed there?
Well, Merle, a couple of things here. One, you're right. I have kind of, on a level, and I suppose now the mere rhetoric of it, it will be less talk about the former head coach here. I do remember his name, and I remember that he did win the offensive MVP in the Fiesta Bowl. I think I acted as though that slipped my mind who won that. I understand. We'll always remember. I will always love that guy. I do. That's it, period. Jonathan Smith, I'm a big fan of his forever. Does that make any sense on the level that I've chosen, though, and will continue to, I hope, live and move in, is to not refer to him as much because we have a new coach and we have a new staff and we have a new direction and we're going to do things differently. And Trent himself has thanked the previous coach, Jonathan, for a foundation and for treating players the right way and all of that. So what I'm doing, I'm playing a little bit. I hope you understand that, Merle, in terms of how I'm going to talk or how I choose to talk about our former coach now. He is our former coach. He has his own lookout and issues now with a different program, and we have ours, and I want to emphasize what we're doing and what we're trying to do. While I was disappointed in Jonathan talking about and even saying, I've been quote-unquote, the quote about, you know, well, you know, I had to make a decision, but I've been thinking about it a long time. To me, argues that we're here not because of, and I don't know about the relationship. I don't know about a failure to deliver a schedule in a timely manner, per se. I don't know about this, that, or the other issue. But we are here where we are in the world primarily because of the upheaval in our conference, Merle, period, right? Do you concur with that?
Sure.
So therefore, on a professional level, I don't begrudge him, no matter whether he got five Power Fives or a schedule 10 days late or not. I'm not sure that part of it was going to make that much of a difference.
I agree about the upheaval thing being a primary reason. I just, you know, I go back to, I always thought this was kind of strange when we were blowing up the old side of Reser. What was that, 2 years ago now?
January 7th of 22, yes.
Yeah, and I found it extremely strange at the time that, one, Jonathan wasn't there, and two, no players were there when that happened. And, you know, there's the video of Barnes doing the TNT or whatever, right? I just found that strange and kind of symbolic at the time because, you know, people quickly forget that we were the worst program in FBS when Gary left us. Like, I really do think that we were the worst program, not just in Power Five, but the worst performing program in our situation. And we had a coach come in and really elevate us to a point where we could redo the stadium and we had that momentum. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we had Jaden Grant available then, who was a great, you know, representative of to be a Beaver. And I mean, we had a guy whose nickname was Jackhammer. And the fact that we didn't have a player there to do that, or even our coach, I thought that was kind of weird at the time because I just thought it was symbolic of, I didn't feel that the team was that connected and the head coach was that connected with the administration. And I could be reading too much into that.
I think that's possible, Merle, what you just said. And I'm glad you're willing, you know, just as I need to, you know, hear you out and say, well, you know, there could be something in what you're intimating and what you're getting at. But I don't think that's a major driving force in the decision that he made to leave here. I just don't.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say driving decision, but, you know, remember when we redid Reser the first time, you know, Anderson, Jackson, they all had the hard hats and the shovels.
Oh, yeah.
That was on a poster.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyways, but all that to say, moving forward, because I do want to move forward, it's the only thing I'm sad about, you know, and I'm worried about the next 2 years, right, is I think we'll be fine as far as we should be winning 10 games because we have the talent in our program to win the 10 games against Mountain West schools. We have the talent. I'm shocked that nobody on the O-line has went to the portal because we have some good young O-linemen. And the other thing, you know, you see a guy like McCoy in the portal, he has 30 plus offers.
Yes.
From the who's who of everybody.
Yes.
I mean, I want people to know that is the type of talent that our former coach, you know, brought into the program and that we have in the program right now. So the expectation to win 10 games should be a real expectation, or 10 plus, because we're competing against teams that do not have the depth that we have, and we're competing against teams that their top guys are in the portal. You know, all these Mountain West schools, yes, if you have a great season at a Mountain West school, you're going to be at a division or a Power mm-hmm. Five the next year, right?
Usually, yes.
So, you know, I just, we have the talent, and I feel like these next 2 years, we just, it's kind of make or break to get into the next level, or, you know, we can only bring in so many non-Power Four, you know, we'll be guys and still compete at the top level and be that, you know, Boise State or whatever. And so that's just my thoughts there. One question I want to ask you, is Jake Kukis being retained?
Don't know about that yet. Haven't seen anything along those lines, so I have no answer to that. That's a good question that a lot of people are asking, and I don't know, Merle.
Okay, because, I mean, former Beaver, I get that, but I will say my biggest gripe in Jonathan's tenure is our special teams has been so inconsistent in the whole, just the, I mean, I go back to the double number, you know, on a block punt. I go back to the decisions and kind of miscues we've had, and we really did, our punting game was so poor this year, and it cost us in a game. And I know, you know, Jake was a great player here. Loved when he picked off Joey 5-pick 3 times. You know, that was awesome. But I do feel just coaching that, having your sole responsibility be that position and getting paid as much as you're getting paid for that, and kind of underperforming it, and kind of in the coaching aspect, having the double number, having these coaching
yeah.
things versus, you know, players
right.
that are performing was concerning. But anyways, that interesting. And then I will say we only have one returner, it looks like, on defense. And that's kind of going to be a shocking, and that's Sione if he comes back. That's kind of going to be a shocking thing to just have so many new players. I'm excited, you know, to see the players. But one returner on defense, that's going to be tough, because as much as the Mountain West is definitely a step, as far as the teams are a step below, I think they do have some really good offenses.
No doubt.
No doubt. Place that less on defense. You know, I feel better. I feel more confident being able to score points against them. But to have one returner coming back on defense is like, you know, I'm excited for our two young middle linebackers and stuff, but that's going to be a whole different change. So anyways, that's all I got for today. I will say women's basketball team, I've been to 2 games this season at home. They look awesome. They really have an inside out presence. And it's going to be awesome to see them in Maui. But they are, and what Rook has done there, a master class on everything. They had one down season, and he's already built it back up into tons of contributors, tons of recruiting. So anyways, wanted to give them a shout-out.
Thank you, Merle. Good talking to you. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Paul before we take our first break today. Alan Thayer joining us at 12:05. Open phones all around it, preceding and afterwards. Paul, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Mike. If I lose you guys, I'm on the road out here on 126 headed to Florence. Hey, I got to – talking about when Jonathan Smith told the team he was leaving, one of the assistant coaches for Jake Kukis talked to a friend of mine, and they called a coaches meeting on Thursday before the Civil War. And he told the coaches that he had discussions that he was thinking about change, you know, going somewhere. And all of the coaches said, do not tell the team. Do not tell them that. Well, the next day before the game, Jonathan Smith told them that. And that's kind of de facto telling them he was leaving, although he didn't actually say he was leaving.
What are you driving at here, Paul? What do you want to, I mean, what's the purpose, in a sense, as you make your way over to beautiful Florence in sharing that with us here today? I hear that story back and forth. Of what consequence right now is it to you?
Oh, it's nothing whatsoever, but we just kind of saw the way the team played, and we kind of deciphered that maybe he had told them something.
Yeah, yeah.
From the horse's mouth, I guess he did.
They were off. There's no doubt about it.
There seemed to be a little spark and an element missing, to be sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, Paul, thank you for coming Saturday night on the more, I guess, positive side of things and a little bit more of, hey, let's get going. You came, Jim and Cheryl, Brian and Cheryl. What a tremendous gathering Saturday night down at Dave Kell's place, Beaver City Sports Bar and Grill. I really appreciate you coming to that, Paul. It was great to see you and a lot of Beaver Nation out there.
Hold on. Yeah, it was great to see Jim and Cheryl. You know, she's been laid up because of her hip replacement. But, yeah, I was surprised to see them, and it was great to see them there.
Paul, thank you so much for the call. Safe travels over to Florence, over to the Oregon coast. Have fun at the beach.
Yes, thank you.
Let's go to Brooks, who joins us. Brooks Hatch calling on, not sure exactly what about, but always glad to hear from Brooksy on whatever may be on his mind. Hey, Brooks.
Well, just really quick, two things from the previous caller who, you know, everyone has their opinion and they're entitled to it. But, you know, first, he's mad because, like, we were supposedly promised that we would get five games against Power 5 teams. Mr. Barnes, Scott, said he thought that's what was going to happen. The reason that we have four is because we were supposed to play Virginia. We were going to play Virginia. This is what I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
And that we couldn't make it work out. So instead of taking a road game at Virginia, we kept the game. We shifted the Boise State game and scheduled San Diego State. So, yeah, maybe we don't have five Power 5 games. But you know what? We got an extra home game out of it. I would rather have 7-5 and playing four Power 5 teams than having 6-6 and having to go all the way to Virginia.
I hear you. It's a good trade-off in that respect. Yeah.
And as, you know, as far as like complaining about the schedule, when it was going to be released, you know, I know, you know, Scott kept saying it was close. A, having worked over there at the athletic department,
right.
I know they do not announce the schedule until they have a signed contract.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
In some cases, it's not up to us when the contract is signed. Both parties have to sign the contract. The other thing is the schedule was released on last week? So December 12th or whatever?
Yeah.
Last year, the 2023 schedule wasn't released until January 18th. So we got a schedule 6 weeks earlier than we got last year's.
Well, I totally understand.
If you're complaining about that stuff, it's like, and saying like that's reason, you know, to not trust the athletic department, athletic director. I mean, that's just crazy. You're talking about such minor stuff.
Well, that was my take in my response last week when Merle expressed disappointment, one of the first when we got reaction to the schedule, and whether Merle speaks for a large contingent, I know certainly he speaks for himself. He's a passionate Beaver fan who loves the program and wants the best for it, and so I respect and appreciate him and people who feel that way. I did feel as though, and I even said, I think you're, you know, a little hung up on the idea that we got four and not five. It, to me, in the long run, Scott did keep saying the qualifier, we got to wait till the ink is dry. I don't think he ever promised. I promise you five big, he never used that kind of language. That was the hope. It was the goal. So I don't feel like he dangled something. So I agree with you, Brooks, that I feel like if we get hung up on that kind of thing, it's misplaced energy, perhaps. It's not that big of a deal in the long run. The timing of the schedule, the release of it. I do think there was more urgency to get it out this year, though, Brooks, with respect to January 18th of a year ago. You knew at least on January 18th of a year ago that you would have a Pac-12 schedule
right.
that would feature nine
sure.
games. You understand what I'm saying. So this was different than last
yes,
year.
I get that point. But at some point, people have to realize that what has happened to Oregon State and Washington State this year has, I don't think it's ever, ever happened.
Right.
In the history of college football where, you know, it's mm-hmm. happened where there's been realignment and one or two teams leave. But it's never happened that 90% of one conference has just left.
Right.
and left the other two holding the bag.
Yeah. No, so you're right.
If people think that this thing is easy to solve, or that it could be solved like within 2 months of everything mm-hmm. happening, they're out of their freaking minds. I'm sorry. And you know, Scott Barnes doesn't need me to defend him.
Right. I mean, I know.
But I think as between he and President Murthy and all the other people who are involved in this, it's just not those, you know, it's just not those two. They're the face of it. But everyone's involved.
Yes.
They have just done an incredible job with this thing.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And I'm not, you know, like I said, he doesn't need me to pump sunshine.
I understand.
But I think they've done an incredible job with this. We have an outstanding schedule, and I think we're going to be pretty good. You know, all these people, the gloom and doomers, that, oh, we're going to lose the whole team through the transfer portal, blah, blah, blah. Yes, we lost some. Mm-hmm. But if you look, the portal, it taketh early and it giveth late. I mean, we've done really well the last weekend of getting guys back.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, I'm optimistic by nature. I remain optimistic. I think, you know, kicking their butt in court, and I'm not a big believer in exacting the pound of flesh. But when they leave, if they say, well, we had to do what's best for them,
yeah.
you know, we had to do what's best for our school. Well, hey, you know what? Shoes on the other foot now, buddy. But
yeah, right.
the same thing still exists. We got to do what's best for us.
Absolutely. Brooksy, good
legally
to hear from you.
And, okay, yeah. Sorry to rant.
No, you're good. Thanks, man. Good to hear from you. Let's break. We need to break. We got to pay our bills. Take care. We thank all the sponsors.
We haven't taken one.
We haven't taken one yet, so we're going to get a couple in here before.
Dave's always
and Dave, hang on.
Through.
We're going to come back right after this on the Joe Beaver Show. Good morning. We continue on the Joe Beaver Show. We need to get one more break in before this first hour is over. Alan Thayer, the one and only at 12:05, to hint at what's next, and we have some confusion.
I feel like if you're ever going to go on a hike and you're just up top of the hill and you see the daylight because you're coming out of the trees, and then you get there and it's only a plateau to another hill
exactly.
to climb.
The procedural posture of this case is out of the ordinary. This has people confused. Well, he will try to dispel some of that when he joins us at 12:05. I don't think Dave is confused by any of it because he lives at the courthouse. Dave, good morning. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show. How are you today?
Fine, guys. Thanks for taking my call. That's true. I'm following this as closely as I can. I got a text message in the 2 o'clock hour on Friday from a Cougar friend. Says the verdict is in. It looks good. So I hightailed down there. Got my copy of the ruling, the court order. Stamped by Aaron Lennon, the clerk of the Supreme Court, signed by the chief. And, you know, how many times have I said I approach things from a fan's point of view? So it's just a two-page document, but I'm going to try to get President Murthy to sign this at some point. I'm going to try to get President Murthy's autograph on this court order. And Kurt Schultz, if I ever cross paths with him, I think I can further tease where Alan is going to go. I'm not going to step on his lines, but I follow Alan avidly, almost like a fan behind Beaver enemy lines. I think he's going to channel Winston Churchill's speech after the Battle of El Alamein when Montgomery beat the Germans. It's the blood, sweat, toil, blood, tears, toil, and sweat speech. So if I'm wrong, I apologize, Alan, but I think that's where you're going to go. And the great thing Alan is doing, you've already teased it properly. In fact, this is where I want to go in conclusion, because I listen to Drake Toll as I do every morning. He had Immaculate on, whose real name is Brian something or other. And Immaculate's going on about how Oregon State and Washington State have won the suit. That's not true, and that's probably what Alan is going to explicate. The direction is promising. Mm-hmm. Everything has fallen the way we would want it to be, but we have a long way to go
right.
yet. But the future, it's going to take years for this to play out, which brings me back to Toll and where this is likely to end up, because he's still pushing and his sources are pushing, including Immaculate and stuff I've seen elsewhere. Your Mark looks like he's lining up outside financing, venture capital financing for the big super conference, the 30-team conference, which in effect the top six of the ACC cut loose to go to the SEC and the Big Ten, and the 30-team Super Conference is a merger of the Big 12, the Pac-2 remnant, and whatever is left in the ACC, in which case there'd be three divisions of 10 each, with the new Western division of the Super Conference represented by BYU, Utah, Houston, SMU, Cal, Stanford, Oregon State, Washington State, Arizona, and Arizona State. We've got to wait for it, but this is coming. We've got to go through things. I love the new feisty Brooke Hatch. I agree with him completely. I take his side of the debate as opposed to Merle Jr.'s. I think President Murphy and Scott Barnes have done a marvelous job with the terrible hand they were dealt with and by, among other people, Jonathan Smith. So I'll end it there. Look forward to hearing what Alan says. Again, I think it's the Churchill. He's going Churchill on you guys today, so you heard it here first.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call. Looking forward to hearing Alan.
Thank you, Dave.
Great
Thank
stuff.
You very much.
Great stuff.
You know, I thought of you because it's one of your favorite films that I keep hearing, The Ruling. There was a conversation, and I watched this scene just to amuse myself and to pay tribute to losing a fine actor at a young age, at the age of 61. I've never known how to pronounce his last name. I've read it many times in credits. Good actor from Frequency. Andre Brauer. I've never known how to pronounce the name. I've only read it. But Andre Brauer, the detective who is closing in on Dennis Quaid in Frequency. Jim Caviezel. Good movie, by the way. Really like Frequency.
Great
a
movie.
Lot.
I've seen
but
it.
But Andre Brauer, who works with Quaid or knows him, and he's friends with him, but he's closing in on.
Yeah.
And Quaid is trying to say, I'm talking to my son in the future. You know, that doesn't play real well with investigative people and detectives, private eyes.
I forgot that was the detective.
And Andre Brauer, whatever his name, however you pronounce his name, but The Ruling. Johnny Bench and Vin Scully were doing a World Series game together, and somebody got hit on the foot by a pitch. This is in the early 90s. Bench and Scully working together, and it was amusing to me to listen to them, and I've heard it on tape here and there over the years. Here's a pitch, and did it hit him? Or were they want to look at the baseball, and Scully goes, oh, that reminds me of Nippy Jones in the 1957 World Series. Johnny comes in. Nippy Jones? And Scully, kind of as a little for him, he's almost stumbling because Johnny interrupted his story about Nippy Jones getting hit by a pitch and then awarded first base because of shoe polish on the baseball. And then there was Cleon Jones in Frequency
in
that was the tip-off.
Yeah, that's right.
Brauer wasn't believing anything about this ridiculous story about talking to his son in the future. About what's going to happen in the 69 World
Series.
Until the
shoe polish.
And then Brower's talking in a very, your husband, you know, he's maybe involved with somebody. He's going to be arrested for a murder. And then he hears in the background what Quaid's been telling him. Just, I can prove that I know that I know what's going on, and I'm talking to my son. He told me, Cleon Jones is going to get hit by a pitch. He's going to be awarded first base after they look at the ball. And then Don Clendenin's going to hit a home run into the left field bleachers. Quaid says all of that about Cleon. So he's talking, and the World Series game's on in the background. He's talking to Quaid's wife. Don't you understand that he's about to be arrested? And then, well, in this very serious, solemn moment, he hears in the background in his hearing.
Peripherally.
Yeah, Cleon Jones hit by a pitch, and he's heading down to first. Now they're bringing him back. Now they want to look at the baseball. And Andre Brauer kind of, he looks at her, looks back over his shoulder. Gets up, walks over to the TV. The next thing happens, Clendenin hits a two-run home run.
It's beautiful.
It's well, and Brauer turns with a bright, ebullient smile to the wife, whose husband's about to be arrested for murder, and she thinks that he's just happy the Mets have taken the lead on the Clendenin
homer.
But
he knows the truth.
But he knows that maybe what Quaid was saying was the truth after all.
Yeah, we just lost him.
I know, Andre Brauer.
Yeah.
And
I forgot he was in Frequency.
And he was great in that. Yeah. I loved him in that. But the whole Cleon Jones, the ruling, Johnny, the ruling. Yeah, the ruling on the hit by pitch and this polish. And it's come to play in the World Series a few times over the years.
Yeah.
And beautifully used in the film Frequency.
We have 1 minute, Dave, on the line.
Dave, good morning. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Hey, guys. Hey, so the transfer portal issue, did we decide that the problem with the portal opening so early was because of when the winter term starts?
That's not official, but it's been suggested as, you know, one reason to why you can't move that portal window.
Well, isn't the easy solution just to move winter term back another month? Have it start in February?
Well, yeah, except then you're dealing with a whole... Here, yeah, right.
We're talking about football.
Yeah, exactly.
The king. We can't tamper with football.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, 30,000 other students, they can wait.
Yeah, hey, good call, Dave. Good to hear from you. You know, that's funny. And the thing too... I always thought it was a joke. I've read that story about how the president at the University of Oklahoma said, we want to build a university that the football team's going to be proud of. I always thought that he's just joking, but I've read, no, the guy was in dead seriousness about what Oklahoma, the University of, was all about. Alan Thayer next.
Uh-huh.
Take me to the Joe Beaver Show, 1240 Joe Radio.
One option is Joe Crow Reservoir in Oregon. Is that the one you're looking for?
No.
Which the Joe Beaver?
The Joe Beaver Show, 1240 Joe Radio.
On it.
It's a destination people have sought for generations.
Are we near Oregon?
And take my wagon train to the Willamette Valley in Oregon.
Be sure to come prepared.
I'm fascinated.
I'm fascinated too. Right on the arm.
And with the proper gear.
Shall we select our masks?
And even in this exacting age.
Everything you say comes back to bite you.
Come ready to contribute, even if your own son has his doubts.
Dad and his mysterious phone calls.
Remembering what a call to Joe can do.
Those phone calls put you through college.
As you draw closer, note the surrounding characters.
Chapel is closed for the COVID.
And know this, John and Mike will celebrate when you get here.
Bells will ring when you arrive.
Arrived at the Joe Beaver Show, 1240 Joe Radio.
Into the second hour, Alan Thayer, Innovative Law Group in Eugene, the founder of Beavers Behind Enemy Lines, our go-to guy in all of the maneuverings. And the order, according to John Canzano last week, issued by the Supreme Court of Washington, was a legal beatdown, he says. The Supreme Court of Washington denied both motions for discretionary review on Friday and granted control of the Pac-12 conference to Washington State and Oregon State. The Cougs and Beavs won by a knockout, he wrote. The 10 departing schools fell silent in the wake of the court's decision. No concession speech, no written statements, no vow to appeal. And then there's more. And attorneys for OSU and Wazoo writes, Canzano on the Bald-Faced Truth were pleased with Thursday's landslide victory. They believed all along that a mountain of evidence overwhelmingly supported their position. Superior Court Judge Gary Leiby ruled in their favor last month that the Washington Supreme Court read the briefs and slammed the door on a review without hearing oral arguments was a blistering statement. And then he quotes, and this is why we're going to go to Alan now to see what he makes of that kind of rhetoric. He quotes, Canzano does, whom he describes as, one involved party told me, quote, I suppose they, the attorneys for the treacherous 10, quote, I suppose they could try to take it to an appellate court, but they're out of ground to stand on, unquote. Mm. So that's his John's column, a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Does he in any way overstate the nature of the victory in the moment for Washington State and Oregon State? And a guy who's helped us understand and that's not easy to try to get a sense of clarity on some of these things. Alan Thayer joins us on this Monday afternoon on the Joe Beaver Show. Alan, I didn't want to totally guide your own direction. You have some thoughts and analogies and some, we hope, dispelling of some confusion about all of this. But let's at least start there. I don't know if you read what Canzano wrote, but that's what he wrote. You've just heard the upshot of it. Does he overstate Washington State and Oregon State's position, or do you think he's essentially right in the way he framed that in his column?
Oh, there might be a little hyperbole in there.
But it's really clear. A great, great day for Oregon State and Wazoo. Great day for Beaver fans everywhere. There's a lot of confusion about this case because procedurally it's different than what you normally see with a case. So if you think about a case from filing of the complaint going all the way to trial, like a football game, you go all the way to trial, you get a judgment, and then you appeal that judgment. And then there's possibility to, if the Court of Appeals doesn't give you what you want, or they flip the decision, then there's a chance to go to the Court of Appeals. And then when it goes to the Court of Appeals, the case is done. That's not what happened here. The case in the trial court before Judge Leiby is still going on. What a University of Washington, the Pac-12, and the other nine traders did was they asked on a particular play, they asked for instant replay. They asked for review. And what the Supreme Court did after receiving thousands of pages of documents, they issued a 1.5-page order that said review denied, the stay is lifted. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they have done is they said, no, we have decided not to review that play. And so now the game continues. And I don't mean to belittle what's happening, going to be happening next in the courtroom, in the courthouse. But everyone is confused. Oh, the Supreme Court has ruled.
Right.
There's no further appeals. There's nothing more that can be done.
Right.
Nah, there's a lot more coming up.
Alan, I'm glad that you, in a sense, you know, what you brought us back to is you're saying, and the football analogy and the review analogy and all of that is well taken. It's good. Dave from Tumwater thought you might go Churchill with an analogy on us, but you've gone to the expedited review analogy. And you're saying that it was an expedited review. They didn't even have to take a lot of time under the hood or whatever else. They just said, no, we don't even need to review this. Carry on. Right. But the game does carry on is what you're telling us, meaning the game isn't over. So what's next in the game, in your opinion?
Well, one thing I do want to say about that review of these particular orders, the only reason why they were able to go directly to the Washington Supreme Court was because the University of Washington was involved. And there is a specific provision in the Washington appellate rules that allow that.
Okay.
So this is just such an unusual situation. And a lot of people and a lot of journalists have been confused by all this, and it's very understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So now what happens? Well, I still believe at some point the parties are going to settle. But assuming that they don't, they complete discovery. The discovery up to this point has been limited discovery just for the basis of the hearing on the original motion for the preliminary injunction. So they get to, presumably they're going to be asking or have asked for more documents. They can require parties to sit in for depositions. There can be pretrial motions. There can be a trial. There can be post-trial motions. And then there can be the appeals in the regular course with which people are familiar. But here's what I really expect to see. We've seen it already, where Washington State and Oregon State refused to consent to distribute $61 million among the 12 members of the conference, as has been recent custom. And now that Oregon State, Washington State are the sole directors, members of the board of directors, their refusal to make this distribution is likely to be challenged. The judge told the parties that the 12 have to be notified in advance of decisions that will be considered. They have to be able to sit in on board meetings, and that if they have any disagreements, then they can bring those directly back to the judge, and he will rule on them. What I think will be the framework for any such hearing was actually addressed during the hearing on the motion, where the attorney for the 9 of the wretched 10 made comment about Oregon State and Washington State owing fiduciary duties to the members. Then the judge asked Oregon State's attorney, do you agree that a fiduciary duty is owed to the members? And the response was, a fiduciary duty is owed to the conference. That's a decision that's hanging out there, or a difference that's hanging out there. And if there is a future dispute, I think that's going to be the emphasis of that dispute. We already have the University of Washington coming out and saying, look at all this money that's going to be coming into the conference. That's plenty of money for Oregon State and Washington State. And I think Dave from Sumwater, he and I had some discussions on this, and I think we both agreed that, yeah, that argument kind of makes Oregon State look bad, at least when they're not agreeing to distribute the $61 million. Maybe they should have set out some sort of an offer distributing mm-hmm. something less.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. It was very disingenuous of University of Washington to say that, because they know that there are substantial liabilities still within the conference. There is a lawsuit, and it's known as the House lawsuit because the lead plaintiff was a student athlete from the University of Arizona, I believe, and his last name is House. So the House lawsuit, based upon antitrust laws, and saying that the five Power Five conferences are in violation of antitrust laws, and $1.4 billion should be paid to 10,000 student athletes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is a huge case.
Yes.
As if 1.4 isn't bad enough, in antitrust cases, the damages awarded by the court are tripled, according to statute.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, 1.4 becomes 4.2.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, there were 65 Power Five schools, and different schools will have different liabilities, but you can do the math. And so take 4.2, divide by 65, and I did the math on this the other day. I don't have it in front of me, but it's about $775 million could be the Pac-12 share, or the share of the 12 Pac schools. There's a lot of unknowns on that.
Right, right.
Do they, what would they really get? Maybe you could win, but most of the decisions by the trial judge have been going against the Power Five conferences.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they sue the Power Five conferences instead of the schools? Well, the schools have sovereign immunity. Some of the things that we've seen in this suit, it's just easier to sue the conferences. When the 10 leave the conference, will their liability follow them? All of these things make it complicated to know what money can be distributed today.
Yes.
But it also raises the stakes for a settlement, and it makes settlements more complicated. You know, we all see fan boards and sports journalists, and oh, they ought to do this and they ought to do that. Well, or while the fans and the journalists are playing checkers, our president and our athletic director and those at Washington State, they've got to be playing chess. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of moving pieces mm-hmm. here.
Right.
And as we've talked about before, I think they've been playing it masterfully. And the result from the Washington Supreme Court validates that. But let's give them some space, because there may be a pot full of money, but there's also, mm-hmm. I think, four lawsuits. There were five. They've settled the Comcast suit. There's another suit by the National Labor Relations Board claiming that student athletes should be employees and not paying them as an unfair labor practice.
Mm-hmm.
The damages there could be substantial as well. So I think this really helps the leaders of our university in Washington State. But boy, they have a lot more to consider
yeah.
before that we get to where we can go, okay, we have victory here.
Yeah. I'm so glad you put it that way, Alan, because it was characterized, as Tom Water told us on a podcast, which does a great job on a lot of issues, Locked on Big 12, Toll and Drake Toll and this guy named Immaculate. But Immaculate said, and even Dave, who likes those guys, said, Immaculate wasn't quite right when he said, quote, Oregon State and Washington State have won the lawsuit.
Right.
I mean, that's just, it was a step. No, we're not going to review that play. So in that sense, the call stands on the field as Judge Leiby made it. We're not going to review it. It goes back to those parties in Whitman County, I would assume, next, right? Nothing's, quote unquote, been won per se. You like the way it's trending, but there's a long road ahead, I think, is what you're telling us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they decided not to review one play. First down stands.
Okay. So Dave has a question that he texted to me. I'll just read it verbatim. Is there any significance in the fact that the WSC, the Supreme Court order last Friday, states, quote, a majority of the court voted in favor, end quote, of the result, as opposed to, quote, the court unanimously voted, et cetera.
You know, whether you win by 1 point or 1,000 points, I'll take the win.
Okay.
Good. Okay. That helps.
Unanimous. That seems to help. But if you think you're going to be going back before the Supreme Court, it would help you, but I doubt if this ever will go back. It could after the case is over and after the Court of Appeals have reviewed it, but I suspect that's highly unlikely.
I have a question, Alan. Do you think that this will be settled and the Beavers will be standing there with a satchel of money before or after the 2-year grace period is up?
I'm hoping, and I don't know why I say this, but I am hoping that this gets resolved before August 1st, 2024.
Okay. So am I.
It doesn't have to, but there's a lot of practical reasons why, because, okay, now they're gone. They're out of the conference. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
They need to pay their bills. I mean, this is like waiting for a court victory while your lights need to be paid.
And I'm sure that there have been some entrees where they've reached out to the plaintiffs in the class action lawsuit, or rather the plaintiffs' attorneys, and say, okay, is there a way to settle as to the Pac-12 defendants for some amount of money? And then that way that bill can be paid out of current revenue and everyone can share in that.
Right.
And there's a reason actually why they might do that. One, it gives them a pile of cash to use as part of their lawsuit to go after the others. But also there's the uncertainty of what does the implosion of the Pac-12 mean for them and their lawsuit. there's it's not certain. I mean,
right.
People have arguments on both sides, but it's not certain. Then uncertainty helps inspire people to settle.
Yeah. Hey, Alan, this has been very helpful and good. So let's close with this. For lack of, try to frame it as simply as possible from a timeline standpoint here in the holiday season, the first of the year coming, what do you expect we're going to hear next? What's the next part of the ongoing story, in your opinion, that we're going to hear about all of this?
I expect that the wretched 10 will go to Judge Leiby and say that they're not distributing money. They ought to be. And we get into an argument of fiduciary duties. Is it owed to the 12 or is it owed to the conference? And there also will be discussion of the liabilities that are left in the conference along with the right to receive money from certain sources.
When would you expect this to kind of that development then to take shape? Early January, mid, sooner? I mean, what do you think?
Well, I would not be surprised if it happened in January. I'd probably say the second part of January.
Okay. Well, whenever.
The filing might be before that, but I doubt if there would be a hearing before then.
Okay. Alan, as it goes, we appreciate everything you've provided us with, and if any other news occurs or hits or occurs to you or something you read or hear, let's stay in touch about it. We've appreciated you taking us every step of the way here. Unlike any other is able to do. Thank you so much, Alan. And let's talk again soon. And we really appreciate it. Thanks for the help again, as always.
Well, appreciate both of you keeping Beaver Nation informed.
Thank you, sir. Alan. Thanks to you.
Let's chat about this for just a second. I'm kind of just getting this feeling it's just going to take too long to know. And life will continue while that's unfolding. And I'm thinking of someone who is in some kind of a battle with someone else. They owe them money. Mm-hmm. And until they get that money, they don't have any money to live on.
Well, life goes on, right?
But they don't have any money to live on.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to Oregon State and Washington State for the next 2 years while this is battled? Now, I like that he said, I'm hoping, as a lawyer, thinking that doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it means in his mind it can happen.
By 8-1?
Yes, by 8-1. Which is what, a month after the whole thing shuts down, officially shuts down. So, again, how do you pay your bills while this whole thing is just mm-hmm. tied up in the courts?
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, how do you plan for year three? Keep that in mind. I'm going to dub that as a title, year three. Year three means the two-year grace period is over and some movement has to be made on the plan for either rebuilding or bailing and joining some other, well, the Mountain West, or maybe by that time, this Brett Yormark thing.
30-team super conference.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
A 7-team Western division.
10 teams.
10 teams in the Western mm-hmm. division, 7 of which were former foes, correct?
Well, 7 in the footprint, 6 former foes, Utah, Cal, Stanford, Arizona, Arizona State, Washington State.
So year three is really the next question. The money thing is just there's not going to be any answers until there are answers.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I do. Are great points.
It's like it's like the demolition of old Parker, old side, and you're thinking, oh, okay, you just have to forget about it and move on and live and then check back in every so often and go, wow, look at how much
mm-hmm.
they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Because you kill yourself wondering about the money that the two schools need.
Mm-hmm.
Now it does matter because in the end, they look a lot better if they're standing there. I was telling my son this last night. I said, you know what? Envision that there's and I've seen this in like Trading Places when Dan Aykroyd goes to the window outside and it's pouring down rain, and Eddie Murphy's inside laughing it up mm-hmm. with all these people that he used to
in
be
in his old life.
In his old life. And you're standing outside in the rain looking through the window at a party you weren't invited to.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but in this case, you're standing outside in the rain with your overcoat on looking in the window at the party you weren't invited to, but you're holding a suitcase that has a gazillion dollars.
You've just been handed that suitcase while you've had to make your way through and survive, eating turkey through a beard.
Yes.
on the bus. My favorite image of that film.
Yeah. And now it's you're looking a little bit better. So you,
yes.
And then they kind of, hey, look, right. He's outside. What are you holding there? A gazillion
$700 million.
Oh, well, hey, let's right. talk. And then you go, right. while the rain is coming down on you, well, and you point to the bag and go, yeah, we can talk, but... And then you just look more enticing to any conference that right. might want to bring you in because you've got that money. Now, you would say, okay, all right, us and the Cougars, will come in, but you're not getting all this money. You're getting some of it for each of your older schools, but we're keeping a lot of it.
Well, that's been the whole argument on behalf of Toll and Immaculate, that your mark will be motivated to get. We'll bring you in full shares, and we get the college. We get your instead of you mm-hmm. sharing the whatever that figure's been thrown out
right.
there, $150 million each, $200 million each, whatever.
Right.
Well, that's going to be distributed 30 ways now, but we're bringing you in, and
well, that's what I'm saying is
yeah.
that if you have that, you're now more enticing
yes,
to
exactly,
a conference
because they can benefit from bringing you in.
Right. But you don't give in. See what I say?
Right.
You don't do what you do not do is you don't do what Cal and Stanford did and say,
we want so badly to be
a part of something.
We're not going to take any money.
Not only will we travel 5,000
yeah.
miles every single road trip, but you don't have to pay us anything.
Right, I know. I got you.
That's just foolish.
If you have leverage, use it while you got
exactly.
it. Exactly. We take a break, open phones down the stretch, anything you want to get into on the Joe Beaver Show relative to the schedule release, the transfer portal news. Did any of you go Saturday night? I loved the enthusiasm, the joy, the energy at Dave Kell's place, Beaver City Sports Bar in Delhi. Thanks to those of you that made the trip down there. Any thoughts about that? Anything else you want to jump in with? We'll get to texts. 497-5356 on the Joe Beaver Show on Joe Radio. Yeah, it happens quickly, doesn't it? Yesterday, a basketball game. Now, according to Daschle and his text line, and it's probably confirmed elsewhere, he says that Jacoby Thomas,
yeah,
the big hit through the portal, is now, had committed apparently to the Beavers and is now, Tennessee?
Yeah, it's his home state.
Yeah.
But man, that's really disappointing. I mean, we were just talking about this on Friday. Middle Tennessee State transfer. I mean, he was going to be a good one. He had turned down Auburn, Texas A&M, West Virginia, Louisville. But I guess he's going to go to Tennessee. I don't
that's
like
why,
the ups and downs.
Yeah, none of it is of... That's disappointing news, yes, if indeed true, which I take it as true. Haven't heard anybody else writing or talking about that, but I assume that if Nick's an excellent reporter, that there's probably, it's probably accurate. Okay, so what do we do about all of that in the meantime as we await the early signing period with some commitments coming in along those lines.
There's names that I hadn't even seen yet.
December 20th. Now, what day of the week is that on the Fan? December 20th. What's today?
18, so Wednesday.
Wednesday, okay.
I guess we're up to nine. Beavers are up to nine recruits. That's good news because they had lost
Then the portal closes on January 2nd, I believe. Then we'll open again in the spring. So everything, as the phrase goes, everything that can be shaken will be shaken, and we'll just see where we stand. Part of me, because of the lack of clarity and knowledge about what's going to happen with respect to the law, the suit, the next development within the Beavers in Washington State's case against the Pac-10, the Pac-12, leaving the Beavers and Cougs right now in control of the governing board, and the only votes for the Pac-2. And as Alan said, the choice before the court is, and what the Oregon State attorneys responded, we have a fiduciary responsibility to the conference, meaning the conference, and that means to the Pac-2, and doing right and by the two members of the PAC, the conference is now two,
right?
The Pac-2, based on all the precedents and language. So I throw that uncertainty into movement in the portal. And until everything is sort of shaken loose and out and settled for fall camp. I hate to put it that far down the road. The Beavers have a game on August 31st at home against Idaho State. And part of me thinks that we can't put too much stock in almost any news or developments or trends from one day to the next, because it could all change again so dramatically. So times are different. And that's if what you just reported about Daschle reporting that Jacoby,
yeah,
after supposedly coming here through the portal, is out again.
They shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Well, they can. I don't even know what a commitment in the transfer portal means until the portal closes.
Well, I mean, don't give up. There should be a point where you say something, you have to stick by it. You can't just let him come and go, I think I'll dabble for a day here and then go somewhere else.
I don't know what a commitment in the portal. I don't even know what that means, John. Obviously, it doesn't mean that it's binding.
Apparently not.
You have until now and this date, January 2nd. But then you have another opportunity in the spring when the portal opens again. For a 15-day window. So I don't know what any of it means. I mean,
they get trips here too, don't they? Don't they give them paid trips to go look at a school when you do portal stuff?
I
think so. I'm not sure on that. But, I mean, at some point they have to say, you go to a school, I think they should. I don't know if they do, but I think the portal should mean if you make an announcement, make a commitment, sign on something, like a letter of intent.
I know.
That you can't back out of it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, you're just ripping the minds and hearts out of these coaches to get you and bring you in. They spend 2 days, 5 days, a week, mm-hmm, or whatever, of this portal time to bring you in, scrambling to bring anybody they need in. And then, you know, after some work, you blow them off and say, I think I'll go to Tennessee. That shouldn't be right. Shouldn't be right. Now, there's a guy, yeah. I love his name. Beaver Blitz is reporting Houston defensive lineman is headed to Corvallis as a transfer. His name is Amapolisi Fifita. Got a really long name. I'm sure
that's
a short
transfer
version.
Portal transfer person portal, out of Houston.
Transfer portal get for Oregon State. Now, two different texters are reporting that a person with the last name of Ford, running backs coach from Idaho, has been hired
to
as
be
Oregon
the running
State's
backs
running
coach.
Backs coach. But one person said his name was Thomas Ford, and the other person said Jonathan Ford.
Well, we'd have to look up the Idaho coaching staff,
right,
which I don't know much about.
I've been searching everywhere to see if there's any official text or tweet on this. There's nothing on the website to confirm. I want to confirm that. Well, I can easily figure out the name, unless Idaho has taken them off their board.
We have one more full break to get to, which we'll go ahead and take care of now and then do a little searching around with respect to that. Keith Hayward is still the name that Angie and Kerry Eggers and others in their writings are advancing as the defensive coordinator when Keith's duties as a defensive analyst for the Raiders comes to an end. We don't know if that's exactly 100% true either, but it's been...
Thomas Ford.
Thomas Ford. Yeah. I feel like, as we go to break, one of the underrated songs in the history of Elton John's great body of work, I feel like a bullet in the gun of Robert Ford. Do you know that tune by Elton? I feel like a bullet in the gun of Robert Ford.
I don't know that I do, because I am a huge Elton John fan.
There's some sort of movie about that I've seen. You know, let's watch a movie. How about a Western? What about a thriller? What about a political intriguing story? What are we going to do? And it seems like I've seen while scrolling something about a movie called The Story of the Incredible Coward Robert Ford or something. I mean, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Incredible Coward Robert Ford or something to that effect. As we go to break, our final break of today, what am I striving for here? What am I after? What's the name of that movie? Is it any good? And on the way back in, John, please do me the solid of finding I Feel Like a Bullet in the Gun of Robert Ford, an Elton John underrated tune. We'll have it when we come out of the break. As who Ford now, apparently Thomas Ford?
It's Thomas.
Okay. It's hard to keep up with Elton, with Thomas, with the incredible coward that he was, Robert Ford. Anyway, let's break and come back on the Joe Beaver Show on Joe Radio.
And I knew that I had lost what should have been found. I knew that I had lost.
lost what should have been found. And I feel like a bullet in the gun.
His inimitable style. I love that song when I first heard it in the early 80s, and I still do.
Were you looking at the album and the words? Because it's hard to hear some of what he's saying.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think it's one of his underrated. I mean, he has done so many great songs, and people say, top 10, Elton John. That never makes the list.
No, that I am an Elton John
but that's
fan,
one of my
and I've never heard that before.
But
and
you
I was
like
looking
the
at the lyrics. I do. I like the song. It's early Elton John, and there was a little bit of some stuff that came out in songs after that song. I could hear,
right.
Like, oh, that sounds like...
The lilt.
Yeah.
But I feel like a bullet in the gun of Robert Ford, and it all comes up only because I heard about, well, we may have a new running backs coach,
Thomas Ford.
I feel like a bullet in the gun of Thomas Ford. I'm sorry. That's what came to mind when I heard, but that's a good Elton John tune. Let's get to some text.
Oh, there are not bad Elton John tunes.
Let's get to some text on the University Honda text line. And anybody, please, who's seen that thing about the incredible coward, the coward, Jesse James by the coward, Robert Ford, is it good? Is it good? Is it worth seeing?
Thomas Ford. By the way, I did a little research on Thomas Ford. He ran. Yeah, was a running back
at
and
Linfield.
Ran track at Linfield back
that's
in the
cool.
day.
Okay.
He is, and according to this texter, the brother of Tracy Ford, who runs Ford Sports Performance Center in Seattle, the number one rated sports performance center in the country.
Cool.
Coach Bray has made a very astute hire here.
Nice.
I actually haven't found anything official that this is a hire. I'm trusting everybody.
Right.
It's fine.
Thank you for that.
It's fine, and I'm glad we looked up Thomas on the Idaho website. That was Alan. Okay, this is from Dave from Tumwater, and Dave writes in to say that was Alan's best segment yet.
Yeah.
I thought his observation that the 10 said nothing after the ruling actually says a lot was very compelling. Also, make sure you check out holiday video from President Murthy and Provost Fesser. The first minute and a half, including cameos by Benny Beaver, Scott Barnes, and Coach Bray as Murthy and Fesser break into Reser Stadium is fabulous. Okay, I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm going to look at it when the show's over.
And he says also, whereas a lot of pundits might be of the mistaken belief that the two have fully vanquished the 10, having that impression out in circulation is not altogether bad, especially in the recruitment arena.
That's true.
Repeat
he's right.
that for me.
What he's saying is, even if it's not exactly true that the suit's over and the Beavs and Cougs have won, if that's what people are thinking, Beavs and Cougs are going to be fine. They're going to have a lot of money. They've won. They move forward. If that helps create an impression and a feeling, go man, go, I think is what Davis said.
Bill in Montana, all right, says, good overview by Thayer. Now the accountants get to work while the case continues. One reason the Pac-2 can't release money to the others is due to the fact we don't have a long-term media contract as a backstop to cover future liabilities. If we had $400 million coming into the conference for the next 5 years, we could release something, but we don't.
No.
So we need to hold on to everything.
What you've got.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good, good, good. Dan in Beaverton. Let's see. I got to go back up to the first one. Sorry, I didn't realize you guys didn't see my post on Monday. Asking about questions to... Oh, this was Saturday or Friday. Sorry. Suing the Power 5 conference isn't the issue. Fox and ESPN created this mess utilizing the Big Ten and the SEC. The real antitrust issue is with them. Well, we've been talking about that for a while.
Yeah, and why? If we come to discovery phase, we've had limited discovery, as Alan said, up to this point. Now in full discovery, or whatever the term is, limited to what? Unlimited. Then that gets to the collusion, the collusionary efforts perhaps behind the scenes from these powers that Dan is referring to, that could lead, again, motivate the parties and powers on the other side. Settle, lest a lot of this come to light.
He says the two media entities are going to have to financially settle this via separate TV agreements and dealing with the non-revenue student athletes lawsuits. Dan in Beaverton.
Thank you, Dan. Good stuff.
Yeah. Really good stuff from everybody. Let's see. March, December 18. Don in Corvallis, every single discussion on the Beavers must be started first with if. Well, yeah, when you're talking about money and you're talking about a lot of things.
Yeah, right.
If this happens, then.
I think, too, and I said last week with respect to the release of the schedule, I hope most of you track with me on this, under the circumstances, all things considered, those kinds of phrases, all things considered, under the circumstances, given the situation.
Qualifiers.
Yeah. I like all of using those qualifying phrases. I sort of like how things are trending. Mm-hmm. What else you got?
Let me see who this is. Dave, yeah. With all of the potential liabilities that Alan Thayer is mentioning, is it possible that Kliavkov saw the writing on the wall and knew that the conference would not survive as an entity and that it had to be split up before there was no money left at all? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I do also wonder, with respect to media rights, a media rights deal for next year, are we... I take it that Washington State and Oregon State are carving out their own deals independent of any sort of structure? Or is there a commissioner of the Pac-2 that will represent the two in that? Or is it each school in its own? You know what I mean? Will there be a Washington State group of people carving out their own media rights television deal?
Oh, that's a good question.
Will we do that with Oregon State? Or is there a Gloria Navarez analog or a Kliavkov Larry Scott analog for the two that will be hired that will do that?
My guess is that they're still working with Oliver Luck and that they would have him work for both schools.
Okay, that could be.
Yeah, I don't see why. And I don't see why there wouldn't be any entity that would take it on and give whatever the amount of money. I don't know how they do that. All right. I watched the Montana-North Dakota State game this weekend to try to restore my faith in college football. Now, this is long, and that's the first sentence, but I just want to stop right there and say, good for you. And I do that with high school sports. You know, I don't call them anymore, but I remember in doing all of what we do here and then going and calling a high school game, it's like,
it is refreshing.
Okay,
isn't it?
This is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, keep going with that. I like that. The theme.
He says to try and restore my faith. It was like watching an old episode of the Andy Griffith Show. Mm-hmm. You wish things were that way, though they probably never were.
That's a good point.
I didn't see any players roll up on a Porsche. There were no agents with slick back hair hanging around. No kids sitting out the game or checking their NIL. They seemed to be playing for the love of the game and for each other. It was beautiful to see. Probably an unreal expectation to ever see that again. But like you, Mike, I'm old.
Yeah.
He didn't put my name in there.
It's a good punchline. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, and you're right. And he's also right to qualify by saying, you know, the good old days at Billy, you know, you can cue up your Billy Joel now, too, and the good old days weren't always good, and tomorrow's good.
Yeah.
I mean, we can idealize certain eras and times, and they probably never were that good or as bad, depending on the point of view.
Yeah.
But what he says is it felt like almost a time machine, it sounds like he's saying. You know, watch Montana, North Dakota State. This is refreshing to see.
Well, I mean, you can do that any Saturday at a small college in the Oregon or a high school game. Go Brooks Hatch, one texter says. Another texter says, think we need to Barney Fife, in parentheses, nip it in the bud, the whining about the schedule. Just be glad it turned out as good as it is. Okay. According to Merle Jr., Jonathan Smith was so petty, he left because he didn't get to push the button, and we should all still be thankful he's blessed us with his presence. He is so critical of Barnes' every move. Stephen Dayton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't read that very well. Yeah.
So is he getting on Merle?
Yeah, he's picking on Merle. Merle, bless his heart, is bringing to every perspective. It has some validity in terms that, you know, Dave says, I bring a fan's point of view when he's talking about some of the things he brings to the table.
Right.
Well, Merle's bringing it from his perspective. He's a great fan of the Beavers. That's sort of where I start. It's a little bit like you know, I know we may strongly disagree sort of on our conclusions,
yeah,
or even the things that we end up getting hung up on. And Merle's been a little hung up on the Barnes-Smith relationship and the release of the schedule, and he's worried about both.
Right. Now, we're all in this room.
Yeah, and Merle brings up things that maybe he represents a point of view on a lot of things as to about why things happen and how they happen and this, that, or the other. I come back with, I think you're overplaying that or you're hung up on something that's not in the long run that important, but it feels like it to him, and he introduces things to us
right.
that are worthy for us to kind of bat around and consider. But once you do that, Merle and anybody else that ventures an opinion out there then become subject to the university on the text line or the phone line and reaction. And there was somebody saying.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
All kinds of perspectives.
But we're in it together.
I
do sense that we're all kind of, as Beaver Nation, pulling together, hoping for the best possible outcome. And I do think with Dave, I think with you and others who've expressed, the job that Scott, President Murthy, Chun, Schultz, and Pullman, the challenges are incredible, and they're doing a pretty darn good job.
I do worry, though, that if we ever all get caught on a desert island, that we won't survive because there's too many differing opinions and who's going to get what done.
Well, let's just form an alliance with the ACC and the Big Ten.
What else you got? There you go. This one, would you imagine that Oregon State and Washington State will split up the Pac-12 administrative work since the Pac-12 offices will be closing soon? My only question about the schedule is wondering if OSU-Wazoo considered playing each other twice next year.
Right.
Maybe the coaches were opposed to it. I assume head coaches have some input into scheduling. They do. That's a good question because we kind of thought about that.
We heard about that. That would have been the Power Five dilemma. You play Washington State twice and you get to your five. And
right.
I remember that being bandied about a home and home with the Cougs. But that may not have had enough legs for the coaches, and either program may not have looked favorably at that.
My astute sports-loving nephew last night, however, pointed out to me, he said, Washington State on its schedule, I haven't looked to confirm, Washington State on its schedule put Pac-12 championship game at the end.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Well,
they're calling that the November 23rd game will be the Pac-12 title game.
Well, no, he meant the game against Washington State and then another game, Pac-12 championship.
Well, maybe there will be a structure along those lines. Who knows?
Oh, you mean we're going to play them twice?
Where would you play it? What's the neutral site?
I'm
joking, but I mean,
I know.
But that's funny. But the Cougs did put that out somewhere.
On their schedule.
I thought maybe they were considering the November 23rd game. The Pac-2 title game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they should.
I mean,
Shane from Cornwallis, just wondering if people that are in the portal and that came on board will be eligible to play in the Sun Bowl.
No.
I don't know.
No.
You got to wait till next year.
Right.
Yeah. Good question, though.
Yeah.
And one last one here, but it was way early. CVB, we have always, recruiting-wise, been a two, some threes, and celebrations break out if we got a four. No. We're straight across the board threes.
Mostly
with occasional
threes.
Two.
Mostly
with occasional threes. Fours. Well, not occasional, but breakout fours. But no, I don't know that we do any twos.
Well, I think I know what CVB is saying. We have elevated to almost always you look and you see three behind the recruit, but not always. When I say almost always, I qualify it.
I'm going to ask Angie.
Yeah, she's...
Because I think it's straight threes with some fours. Well, no,
a very rare breakout four. A very rare four.
But we do get fours...
On the rebound.
Through the portal.
Right, and that may be happening
Aiden
even now.
Aiden was a rare get as a four from a high school.
Right.
But there are... The Jonathan did a great job from the very beginning of getting former fours through the transfer portal.
True. And the coaching staff now is charged with the usual mode of operating for the Beavers in coaching when it comes to recruiting, and that's finding the diamonds in the rough and developing the heck out of them. We'll see you tomorrow.